So, I know you're not supposed to start a sentence with so, but so, somebody sent me an email this week, and I get emails like this fairly often, although this one was much more detailed and much more specific, and actually it was very specific. I get emails, I don't know if you do, maybe a couple times a day, that this person is having surgery, please say Tehillim or Davin, or take upon yourself a mitzvah in order for the schut of this particular person. I even got one a couple of weeks ago that this particular person is having a wisdom tooth taken out. Please say Tehillim. So, right. And this one was much better. I'm going to read to you the email. Actually, you can read to you the email, which is on the back of the page. And you're going to be upset. You're going to be upset with some of the things that it says here, but not for the same reason that I'm upset. Let me read. If you don't know, this is about a case. I took out some details, but this is about a case of these kids who, as far as I can tell, were Hasidim and probably Satmar, who didn't realize the first and maybe only principle of capitalism, and that is that there's no such thing as a free lunch. And someone offered to pay their plane ticket to some Keveret Tzadikim, so on, someplace in Europe, they just have to stop off in Japan on the way and bring a suitcase of valuables, which was Judaica. Apparently, ancient Judaica includes all kinds of drugs.
White powder.
White powder, right. So apparently that we have a long, apparently we have a long tradition of such things, and these things now classify as Judaica. And they were promptly arrested, and the sentencing of one of them was last week, and this email came out the day before of the sentencing of one. And it says as follows, again, last page, page 8, out of sheer desperation, Harav HaTzadik, who will remain nameless, if you need to know, I will tell you, was approached and questioned as to what more can be done for the three Bachrim. The Tzadik's answer was precise, and his orerus, awakening, in tznius will surely be a big schus for the Yeshua. In English, that means
responsible.
Right, right. The white powder came from you. That's I understand. Dear sisters, I approach you. Yeah. Dear sisters, I approach you with a trembling body and shattered heart. Heed the cries of young innocent children. Whether they're innocent, I don't want to get in the case. Who knows if they're innocent or not, or what they knew, what they didn't do. The court in Japan did not believe that they were innocent, and actually did find at least one of them guilty so far. Who are yearning to taste freedom again? The commitment of righteous women to improve in any area of tznius carries more weight than all efforts combined. Now, again, I don't know when Eliyahu came and told them this, but this is what they believe. And of course, Jane noticed the opposite of this. That means that the reason that they were arrested in the first place was because of a lack of tzniut. Okay. Your contribution in the form of a personal undertaking can be the deciding factor in their fate. Who can remain idle at this time? Since we've started the tzniut campaign, we've seen incredible sight to Dishmaya, help from heaven, in easing the plight of the prisoners somewhat. Let the merit of your Kabbalah, means accept upon yourself something now, give rise to the ultimate release of our children. May the collective schut of tzniut improvement result in the gula shleima of all Klal Yisrael. You didn't say amen. Amen. And by the way, at the bottom, I cut out for you also, there was a form you can fill out that my name is so-and-so, I hereby accept upon myself the things written in there. If anybody wants that part of it, I'll be happy to send that to you as well. But for this, because of space, I didn't include that. So let me read the things that you need to work on. Shetel is refined within parameters of halacha and does not attract attention. Refrain from wearing excessive makeup and perfume in any public areas. I assume that doesn't mean public areas of the body, but public areas. Refrain from wearing attractive, excessive jewelry in any public areas, same as previous comment. Refrain from brisk walking as a form of exercise. One second, we'll get to that. Refrain from eating, drinking. No, so there's more, sorry. Refrain from eating, because that can solve all the problems of tzniut if you refrain from eating and drinking. Refrain from eating, drinking in public areas, especially when men are present. Skirt is at least 4 inches past the knee. Neckline properly adjusted in all clothing. Turban, tichel, That's what you call the thing on the head? Turban tichel, covering all hair at all times during the day. Secular newspapers and old-fashioned magazines kept out of the house. When in public street stores, buses, waiting rooms, cell phones vibrate silently, and phone conversations are kept short and quiet out of earshot of bystanders. Shoes, heels fitted with a rubber sole. This was known, that it was a tradition all the way back to Sinai, that all women always wore rubber soles. Exercising discreet and low-key behavior in shared sitting area, apartment building, lobby, doctor's office, chasana hall, shul, mechitza, bus stop, standing in line, and checkout counters, etc. Learning Hilchos Tefilas daily, and once again, it made the list for a second time, refrain from brisk walking in public area. So again, I'm not that learned, but you know, I was trained that when something is said twice, it's obviously for emphasis. So apparently the major problem with the Jewish community is because of brisk walking, which means that it's ultra-Orthodox streetwalkers that who are causing all the problems that we have today. So now, what bothers me about this is not what bothers you about this. What bothers you about this?
Everything.
Right, that's not what bothers me. No, the men are sitting in colon learning, so I don't even want to ask me such questions. That's not included. One second. I think I got you over here. Refrain from talking. No? That was, okay. It could be brisk walking, the tells walking, who knows what. Yeah, that's what bothers me. What bothers me is not all the details, because obviously, or I would hope, apparently the person who wrote it comes from a particular segment of society with certain sensitivities, and it could be within their sensitivities these various things are considered to be outrages, and maybe in Beis Yaakov's they do check the bottom of each person's shoe to see what their soul is made from. I mean, I would think that the soul is far more... I would think that the soul is far more important than the soul, but no, yes.
What bothers me is that he's taking something that actually is true and authentic and perverting it.
That's what I'm saying.
The idea that it's by changing, by taking on additional mitzvot, by changing your behavior, by examining the community's behavior, you know, there is a connection between the behavior of the community and what happens to people within that community. But this is like a complete perversion of it.
Right. So my question would be, let's just say all of our holy sisters, right?
Was it sent to you by someone you know or not by someone you know?
Yeah, he sent it to me because he thought it was funny. But No, that's right. No, this is 100% serious. It has the names in it. It has a Kabbalah. It's written by the mother of one of the kids. And she's asking the community. And at the end, she says that anybody who puts their name, she'll go to the kever of Shimon Bar Yochai and she'll daven for them and for their families and so on. This is very authentic. Very authentic. This has been sent around, email to all... Yes, there was a book published in Gateshead about sneers.
And I think it had all this sort
of At least. Now, obviously, in terms of the substance of what's written over here, we could, if I were a masochist, have a class on each and every one of these particular points. Right? I'm not, and therefore I won't. Unless you beg. Well, if I'm a masochist, well, I'm going to say it. Anyway. It is important, but the details. I know, but the details over here of the interpretation of certain things over here. Again, I don't want to get talk of the substance. That's why I'm avoiding that completely. What is far more disturbing to me is the expectation of over here of a quid pro quo, which means, can we be God's accountant? And can we decide that if we do a particular mitzvah, we're going to get a result out of it? That's the issue which really bothers me much more. Now, I want to be careful. Improvement individually is a very good thing, and I'm not being cynical, and I'm not making fun of that. Improvement collectively is a very good thing, and I'm not being cynical towards that. But what I'm bringing up is this expectation that if I do this, then I'm going to get this result. Now, this doesn't mean that if somebody is in a bad situation, one should not do anything, one shouldn't respond. One does respond. The question is, what are the responses and how these things work and what the limitations are? So let's take a look at a couple of sources in order to become educated. Yes?
Okay, but not, in other words, trying to look at things from the opposite view. We all have different ways. At some point, all of these kinds of mitzvot become somewhat subject to what, you know, your rabbi tells you, what your community does, what your, in other words, taking this out of context as not being our community,
right,
perhaps, or the, if you want to generalize as the community of maybe this room or this building or this neighborhood or Lo Mishneh Ma, in a way, okay, like, it's, I get the point, like, it exaggerates it and it kind of makes you think, well, that's our religion. But on the other hand, it's not so fair to say, well, I would never do that because everybody does that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their own views of what they feel is, you know, sneeze or, you know, righteousness or whatever, that is not, it's, in other words, and if you believe it is, then it is.
Well, one thing which is interesting,
one thing which is very interesting
over here is that Tzaddik, and I've met him, I know who they're talking about, he is a very righteous man, he's a very holy man, he lives in Me'eh Sharim. What he said is that there should be an awakening in terms of tzniut. Now, that could be interpreted in many, many, many areas, what that means, and this was interpreted in a very specific type of area. So that itself is an interesting sociological response and perspective. But as I said, it's the global issue. We like global issues, right? It's the global issue that concerns me much more, and that is, again, this kind of an expectation. There is a well-known tradition among, which I don't know when it started, I can't figure it out, but ask any single girl in a Ba'alat Tshuva yeshiva, and she'll tell you that she knows this, that if you pray by the Kotel for 40 days in a row, that will help you find a shidduch. Okay? It's also well known that if you go and daven by Amukah, it'll help you follow. That, by the way, I can show you the source for it. It's 20th century source made up by a tour guide. Okay, no one ever heard. It's one of the Kivrei Tzaddikim up north. That I can show you when it began, and no one ever quoted it. No one ever heard of it before that. But again, this kind of approach,
if you believe it enough, then
if enough single people hang out by Amukah, you just have to serve drinks and a cover, and you know, and you'll be fine. But again, I am being serious. It's this point of the expectation of the response that I want to address. Yes. Just in order to get started a little bit, I want to read one thing about Tehillim. The Rambam writes in source 28, Halochish al hamakah, somebody whispers or murmurs over a wound, v'kori pasuk min haTorah, and reads a verse from the Torah, v'chein akori al hatinok shelo yiv'at v'hamaniach sefer Torah o tefillin al hakatan b'shvil sheyishon, somebody who uses the Torah or uses a verse, use anything in order, even a kid that he should sleep. Lo dai lahem shehem bichlal menachashim v'chovrim, which are wizards. These are prohibitions from the Torah. Ela shehem bichlal hakofrim mitorah. These people deny the Torah. Shehem osen divrei Torah refuot, because they turn the Torah into ways of healing. Again, hakofrim mitorah shehem osen divrei Torah refuot guf ve'ein an eler refuot nefashot. And what the Torah is a way to heal your soul, not to heal your body. He does allow you to say Tehillim, you'll see in the next line, Shenema v'yuchet, so on, Aval habarisha kore psukim imurzmur umizmur mitihilim, kedesha tagein alav, zchut kriyatan v'natzel mitzarot minizakim harezim utar. But if nothing's the matter with you, and you want to read Tehillim, you're not doing because you want a response, you're going to read Tehillim because that's fine. The Rambam just now said that anybody who reads Tehillim because someone is sick denies Torah. I know. Now, I'm just saying this, and I'm taking this a little bit out of context, not so much out of context. So I have to get back to this, but I figured that I'd shut you all up with that. Okay. Yeah. Right.
I can understand why someone might take on a stricter adherence to something themselves, but right. to take it on for yourself to affect someone else.
Is where it gets a little bit strange, which means if somebody tells me to do a mitzvah for the schud of somebody else, right, Reuven comes to Shimon and tells him to learn more Torah for Levi. So again, am I God's accountant right now to have to say, hold it a second, to the angel in charge of the stuff, the accounts have to be arranged because my mitzvah is going over to that guy. Again, how exactly do we do that? Now, you're correct in that point. It wasn't, I think, the main point of the Rambam. The Rambam really over here was trying to make a distinction between doing reading Tehillim and having a spiritual experience by reading Tehillim, and therefore this will be good for you spiritually, versus reading Tehillim because he's sick and you want to protect that person. And that's what the Rambam called terrible things. Why? Because you're ascribing power to the Torah instead of power to God.
What about Kaddish?
One second.
You don't have to say Kaddish, it's just a minhag. It's hysterical.
Do you do this?
Do you do this to bother your husband
or just it amuses me? It amuses you. Which one? Okay. Yes.
Why shouldn't somebody pray to someone who's sick?
I didn't say pray. One second. I didn't say pray.
Right. This is specific.
I didn't say pray. I said someone to say Tehillim and think that that's going to heal someone. I didn't say pray at all. Pray is something else. Praying is not what the Rambam's talking about. Praying says, I say to God, God, please heal this person. Are you allowed to do that? Yes, you're allowed to do that. No one ever said anything about this. Excuse me? No, I'm praying. Well, you know what? Let's go back to the beginning. It depends how somebody says it. Let's go back to the beginning now. It's good. I bothered all of you today. You thought I bothered you the most with the tznia stuff. It got even better. Don't daven. Don't say tehillim. Don't. Okay, this is good. It could, but again, we can't do that cheshbon necessarily. Which, by the way, there's a larger issue. If we do a mitzvah, should we expect to be rewarded in this world? No. A mitzvah affects our relationship with God, and that's not necessarily, when I say, and I'm throwing the word necessarily in, but it's not necessary. In this world, I mean, it helps our relationship with God. But again, all the more so, I'm expecting that if I do a mitzvah, that I'm going to affect not this world, not just this world, I am able to direct it and send it, God, please send it to that guy over there sitting in Japan, okay? Because that's going to be for him. So maybe yes, maybe no. I called up a well-known posek this week, and I asked him how this works, how that works. He said, well, because you're doing it for them. I said, okay. And therefore, I said, bring me a proof that you can do such a thing. And there was silence at the end of the phone. I let the silence go on for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. I said, am I to interpret the silence that you don't have an answer? And he says, correct. Just silence. Because, again, so many people do this, so this must make sense. And maybe I'm making a mistake, but at least, as I said, I silenced somebody else who should have had an answer to this. Let's start reading some of the sources. There are three things that cause your sins to be remembered in heaven. What are they? Elohein, kir natoi, v'iyun tfila, u'mosir din chavero. One of them is a shaky wall. A wall is shaky, it can fall down. If it falls down, it could fall down in your direction or it could fall down in your neighbor's direction. So what are you saying when you don't care about your shaky wall? You're saying, I have schuyot and the wall is going to fall on him and I don't have to worry about fixing it. Iyun tfila. One second. Any of you recognize that term, iyun tfila? Where do you remember that term from someplace, right? First part of davening, yes. And what does it say? That these are one of the good things, right? These are one of the good things, right? What? So we have to say what exactly. Because over here it says iyun tefillah is bad. This is something. Iyun tefillah. Iyun means to pay attention to tefillah. Iyun tefillah. Pay deep attention to tefillah. The third one is moser din al chavero, that you tell on your friend. Iyun tefillah. Iyun tefillah. Rashi writes somech al tefillato shetehei nishmaat umit ametz lechaven lilibo. He is confident that his tefillah will be answered, and he tries very hard with his kavanah. So which was the problem over here? The kavanah or confidence? Right. I mean, the Gemara quotes the same idea in another place. V'amar b'chanan or b'chanina, kol ha-marich b'tefillato, ein tefillato chazer reikam, in source 3, that whoever prays long, hard, then their tefillah will not come back empty. Menolon mimosh rabbeinu. At the end of the second line, Aini, is this the case? Whoever says tefillah very long and looks into it, sof bo lidei ka'ov lev, this will lead to pain in their heart. Rashi and Rashi over here. In source number 4, Rashi, which to be honest is from another place, but it's commenting on the same phrase, uma ayen ba. A person says that God will answer my prayer because I prayed with kavanah. Now, hold it a second. So how are we supposed to pray? No, you're supposed to pray with kavanah. Exactly. One second. One more word. It needs one more word there. It's not expectations. You need to pray with the feeling, I do not deserve to have my prayers to be answered, but God, with your chesed, perhaps you can answer them. The Rush in source 6 says this somewhat clearly. Iyun tefillah, pirish kavanah talev. That means to have proper kavanah. Ukeshehi deperek mefanin elu dvarim, sha'adam ochel peruteyum ba'olam azeh, iyun tefillah. One of the things that it says, a person enjoys the fruits in this world and the world to come, one of those things is iyun tefillah. Right? So iyun tefillah is listed as one of the really positive things. So then he quotes the other one. Ha'omer b'brachot mayim b'tfilat sof b'alidei ke'elev. V'chein shlosha dvarim maskim avonat shel adam iyun tefillah. So here we have a contradiction. Is iyun tefillah good or bad? So he writes, Hainu shemitzapesh yevo bakashato shesavor shetivela nishmat. One is when he has expectations that because I said this prayer, so this prayer will be answered. Correct. If you look back at Tosfot in the previous source, at the end of it he writes, commenting on the Gemara Berachot, v'yesh lo medetrei iyun tefillah, yesh? There's two different types of iyun tefillah. Iyun tefillah dehacha, ha-mitzapeh she-tavo bakashato, one where he expects that he will be answered, v'iyun tefillah dehatam, the other one, she-machavein libo le-tefillah, that he prays with kavanah. So iyun tefillah, in the simpler sense, I'll say the positive sense, would be that you understand the words that you're saying. Any time that you spend learning the Siddur, understanding how it works, understanding what the prayers are, is something which is positive, is included in Iyun Tefillah. Any prayer that you say with Kavanah is included in a positive Iyun Tefillah. But when you get to that point, that I'm davening with so much Kavanah, and therefore I will have this result, what it really comes down to is that my Tefillah is result-oriented. Now the question is, when I say result-oriented, that I have expectations that it has to be answered. Now, on the other hand, you say, so why bother praying if my tefillot are not going to be answered? So I'm still going to address that. But, I mean, you're right. There is definitely some type of an arrogance over here. But when it comes down to this point of deserving. And again, if you compare it to those other two cases in the Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah, what were the other two cases? My walk and fall. It can fall this way, it can fall that way. Or I say to God, okay, judge this person. He's a terrible person. God can then say, hold it. You want me to start judging someone? Let's take a look at how have you been doing. Let's open up your tick. It's like if you go and tell on your friend in Mas Hachnasa, right? The first thing they should do is they should be opening up your tick and taking a look how you've been doing recently. Yeah.
All prayers are answered. Sometimes they're answered.
Yes, no, yes, yes.
But if it's included in this list of three, where it's the other two have a reciprocal relationship because you've got something started with God who's going to check you out also. If you've set something in motion that could hurt somebody else,
It's the same in the sense is that you're calling on God and you're demanding that this is what I deserve, this is what I want. So God says, okay,
you want what you deserve.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Let's exactly, exactly, exactly. Let's open up the tick and let's take a look what you really do deserve. The Aruch HaShulchan in Source 8 is, I think, very good about this. Again, this idea comes all the way down to the law, it's Shulchan Aruch. The Aruch HaShulchan explains that he's talking about Kavanah. The Acher Kach HaKavanat Al Yechshov Adam Bidato. A person should not think in their minds, Shira'ui Hu She'as HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bakashato, that it's appropriate for God to fulfill my request. Kevan She'kivanti B'tfila, Tfilati, because I had a lot of Kavanah. The Adarabah. By having that attitude, Ayadezeh, Maskirin Avonotav Shel Adam, it brings his sins up into the discussion as well. So Ayadeh Kach Mefashfashin B'ma'asav, you start taking a close look at the person's deed. Lomer Zeh Boteich B'Zchuyotav, this person is so confident in terms of his good deeds. Ki Chavot HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adam Lo Yisaper Mirov, because generally the obligations or the overdraft that we have in heaven is one that none of us can actually bear. Elo yichshov, a person should think, Shiaseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chazdo v'yomar b'libo mi ani dal v'nivzeh b'alavakesh meit malchei melachim. Who am I to really go and make a request of God? Im lo mi rov chasadav, that should be out of God's incredible chesed, shehu yitbarach metnaheg b'hem im briyotav az yikubal tfilato. Because of God's kindness that he has for his creatures, for his creations, and therefore the tefillah should be accepted. And basically, Jane said it before. The question is over here, do I approach tefillah as one of din, or as one of chesed? And what he's saying is, if I approach tefillah as din, I prayed, and therefore I deserve this to happen. So that's considered to be a very negative type of tefillah. If I approach tefillah in terms of God, pleading, God, please help me, and so on, and I am undeserving, but you can help me anyway, and please use your chesed and help me, not that I deserve it, but please help me, because that kind of tefillah is the tefillah which is accepted. What's the matter? You have a quizzical look.
Do you really think after, you know...
that they deserve it?
No, you know, I mean, world calamities like the Holocaust, that just because they say something that God will... I mean, I hate to get political, it reminds me of people saying, oh, no, God would never let the Holocaust happen. I mean, God let the Holocaust happen, why, you know...
I can't believe you're getting political.
Well, in other words, yeah. it seemed like such a ridiculous thought at the time, God won't let that happen. But just get
so simple. And how many girls do you think get up and daven 40 days in a row by the kotel because they're going to get a shidduch, and then the 40 days go by and they didn't get a shidduch and they can't believe, now why did this happen? Now, hold it a second. You're allowed to pray for a shidduch, but, you know, who went and decided that this is a skula and this is going to work now? And so, yes, you pray for it, but it doesn't mean that you have the attitude, well, I put my 40 days in and I want results. And I'm saying that I know, but we are witnessing a revival, and I'm not saying revival, we were witnessing a very voodoo Judaism about, where we think that we can do this and we'll get this result and do this and get this result. Excuse me?
Capitalistic Judaism.
You like capitalist?
Because you're always making the challah for somebody who wants a baby. You know, you have these groups of women.
Well, right after Pesach was a good one, that you bake a key in the challah and so on. I heard Rav Herschel Schechter give a shir. I never heard of it either. I never heard of it as well. Shisel challah, tell her about it. I never heard of it either. I was in L.A. November or December. I was speaking by the OU West Coast Convention. Rav Herschel Schechter was there, and he was speaking as well, and he gave a shiur to all the rabbis, and it was about skulos and things like this, and maybe it's on their websites. It was taped. Maybe they have it over there. But somebody asked him about this, and he said it's Darchei Amori. Darchei Amori means it's Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is, but because what are you allowed to do in Judaism? You're allowed to do things that make sense. That anything that makes sense, you're allowed to do. Something that doesn't make sense. Now, I'm sure there's many good Hasidim... I'm sure there's many good Hasidim, live and dead, who've been doing this for a long time, and in terms of his point, he was saying anything that doesn't make sense. One second, why do we put a mezuzah up? Because the Torah says put a mezuzah up. Do some people think if you put a mezuzah up, it will protect your house? Okay, but that's not why you put a mezuzah up. What? No. One second. But to say, I'm going to bake a key into my challah because this will cause me to have more parnasa, because this will open up the gate of the rachamim of... Now, if you if you pray, God, please give us more parnasa, even though I'm undeserving of this, that makes sense. So he was not so happy with this custom. You do that? So all of those things, we all remember on Rosh Hashanah, right? You take an apple, right, and you say that you should have a sweet year, right? Now, what's that? What's the main part there? Is it the magic of eating the apple, or is it the Yehi Ratzon? Which one is the important part? Okay, now, where should you have the Kavanah? Yehi Ratzon, right? May it be God's will that I have a sweet year. May it be God's will. So there I'm using the fruit or whatever the thing is as a device in order to help me pray. So now, if you want to bake your... You do this?
So sometimes these things are not important because of the act itself, but it's a certain awareness and a certain focus and direction and the prayer that may come with it.
Right, so that's the point. If you do something and there's a prayer that comes with it, so then it becomes a prayer. If you do this again as voodoo, that I now know the secret about how the Rothschilds made their money. They baked a key into the challah and are just waiting for the bank account now to fill up with
put the key in and say, I hope this gives me parnasah, that's okay?
It's much better than just putting the key in.
Right.
So if you go back to Lulav and Esrog, it's good. There God says to do it. Once God says to do it, it's a mitzvah. Now, what's that?
God says all sorts of things. He says, if you do this, I'll give you this. You're saying...
There aren't so many of those things. There aren't so many.
This equals that. But God was the one who started it. If you act this way, I'll kick you out. Okay, so...
Right, so I think if you take a look at the 613 commandments, you'll find the vast majority of them do not say what reward you will get if you keep them. The overwhelming majority do not say it. There are very, very few that actually say it. It is true that on a global level in the Tochacha, wow, you're a week ahead of yourself, that it does say that if you don't follow this, then God says, I will punish you if you don't follow the Torah. Yes, that's absolutely true. Now, what I'm going back to is the person who just throws the key in and thinks that that's going to do this magically, that would be highly problematic. The person who takes the red string and puts it around. By the way, if you want to know all kinds of things like this, I highly recommend a book called Tumim Tiyeh, Be Pure in Front of God. This is written by Harav Yaakov Moshe Hillel, who is one of the experts on Kabbalah in the world. He's an English speaker. You can even look him up in the phone book and call him up. And he has an English copy of the book, which has around a third of the material and is written in a much, much more popular way, called Faith and Folly. You can take a look. And Faith and Folly. The Hebrew is much better. That's why I didn't carry the English in. The Hebrew is much better. And he tells you all kinds of things that Kabbalists can do and all kinds of things that they can't do. He talks about incantations that are prohibitions, that all kinds of ways that you are thinking you're being religious, but it's not our religion that you're doing.
So if you say Leah and Hara, it's okay, but if you wear the red string, it's not.
The red string is a little problematic. If you say to God that I do not want to cause any attention to myself and therefore I do not want to receive what's called an Ayin Hara, I would assume it's fine. The whole thing comes down to, we believe in one God, right? I just want to point this out. Yaakov Hillel. Yeah, and the Hebrew book really is, as has been pointed out, is far more in depth than the English book. But we believe in one God, and we just have to remind ourselves sometimes. But let's take a look at a couple more cases in the Gemara. Look at this. I upset you now even with the challah. This is good. Yeah, a knife and cake is a school to get out of jail, right? That's a little different. Source number 10. Um, go to the second line in the middle. V'hatanya ha'omer selel zulat tzedaka b'shvil sheyichyu bni. Somebody who says, I'm going to give tzedaka, but I'm giving it because I want my son to get better. So apparently somebody has a son who's sick and says, I'm giving tzedaka so my son gets better. U'v'shvil sheskeh ba l'chayel u'maban, that if you share in the world to come, ha'rez tzadik gamur, because that person is completely righteous. There is two different versions of this, Gemara. One version, instead of saying tzadik gamur, says ha'rez tzedaka gamura, which I think makes a little bit more sense than saying tzadik gamur, but the Gemara says, Lokasha kan bisro kan binachrim. Because the Gemara earlier had expressed a negative opinion towards somebody who does give tzedakah or mitzvah conditionally. Rashi explains, Hareza tzadik amur. Imragil bakachav, this is what he does all the time, because it's hard to say you did it one time and now you're a tzadik. Kan bisrael, shalibu lashamayim. Of course, they believe in God. Ve'im mirein lo burchayav. And if their lives, they become oppressed during their lives or things get difficult, Einu korel tagar, they will not reject heaven. Ela Torah hayisurim ba'avono, and say, these things happened, I must have deserved this in one way or the other. Aval nachri yib'ein mativin lo kigmulo kore tagar. But if the non-Jew doesn't get what he invested, we'll then start questioning. Which means, he's saying is that there are certain people, he's calling it Jews and non-Jews, we can decide if there are Jews today who have non-Jew hashkafa in this. But he's saying is that the person who believes that whatever I do for God should create a quid pro quo. I give the hungry God an offering, and therefore I placated that hungry God, and now my life will work out in that particular way. Now paganism definitely worked this way. And you can, you know, go in the pagan yellow pages and look which particular area of your life you want to improve, and then you give that particular God their gift, and then you work things out. And he says, no, with Judaism, it doesn't work that way. With God, it doesn't work that way. A person can say, I'm going to give tzedakah that my son should get healthy. He says, that's fine to say that. As long as if it doesn't work, you don't end up questioning God at all and keep on giving tzedakah, because he's then saying, okay, I apparently was not deserving to have this, to have the merit, to have this work, but one does not question God. God is the tzaddik, v'ani lo tzaddik. So again, the Rashi over here is very clear in his approach over here. What's interesting to us is that here is an attempt to do a mitzvah, and that you want quid pro quo for it. You want your mitzvah to be result oriented, and the Gemara, I mean, it says if you will keep on doing the mitzvah and not change your attitude and keep on performing it, then that's a wonderful thing. But if the thing doesn't happen, then you'll stop doing it. So then obviously this is a very bad thing. And again, it won't even ascribe that type of an attitude to Jews. It says no, only non-Jews have that attitude. Yes.
Paganism
was simpler. You knew the price. You knew what you had to pay. And you
say an idol, and then he gave a sacrifice, and he would sacrifice something, and then there was still whatever, the plague or whatever was going on. And they felt it. They do another one.
Yeah, but it was the attitude was a bit more automatic and a bit based upon you made you. I think that the example over here of tzedakah is particularly important because the Gemara tells us that when it comes to tzedakah, that is one place that you can do a mitzvah and accept and expect a result. Right? That I think is fairly well known in source number 12. Aser ta'aser, aser bishvil shetitaser. You should give a tenth in order that you should end up getting wealthy. And I have a whole long story there, which we don't really need, that just somebody went in and told it. But over here, the one thing that is important over here, it says that you're even allowed to test God in this particular area. And so on. In this area, you're allowed to test God. You're allowed to test God and keep on giving ma'aser and expect, when you analyze your figures at the end of the year, you should expect that you only made money on this and you did not lose money because of this. We also have in source 13, which is in Hilchot Tzedakah, in the Shulchan Aruch, Hatzedakah doched gzerot hakashot. Right? Tzedakah is something which works. Rav Tatzil Mimavet. End of the line, Haggad, the Ramah says, V'hi ma'asheret. It makes you wealthy. V'asur l'nasot HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki'im b'davar zeh. You're not allowed to test God except in this era, Shenemar. And he quotes the same verse over there. V'yesh omrim, next line. D'dafka b'netinat ma'aser mutan l'nasot HaKadosh Baruch Hu avlo b'shar tztaka. That you're only allowed to do it by ma'aser, that you're not allowed to test God when it comes to all... Can you open the window in the back? But you're not allowed to test God when it comes to all kinds of other areas, which means maybe not. That when it comes to this particular, when it comes to this particular thing, you're allowed to do a mitzvah with expectation of some kind of a return on it. Right, and that's a very good point, because the lishma aspect seems to be impacted negatively when a person does take this kind of attitude. Now, just a couple of things about this. One, the Pitrei Tshuva in source 15. Right, Ayin, take a look there. Shakatav dehad asher denasot b'maot ma'aser haynu imose amanat letasher avo b'shvil tova acheret kigmo b'shvil sheyichyu banav ukedomer asur lenasot. Which means he just went back to the other Gemara, and I'll translate. He says, you're allowed to give it in order to get wealthy, because that's the only thing that it talked about in the Gemara. But to say, I'm going to give the ma'aser, now make my kid healthy, that you can't do, because that goes back to that other Gemara, where it says that somebody gets stuck and my kid should get better. He says, you're only allowed to do that if you really don't expect the results, and you'll still give it without the results. So basically, the Pitrei Tshuva put the two Gemara together and say that you can be result-oriented only when it comes to getting wealthy. If you want this limited a little bit more, he writes in source 16, he quotes the Rav Yaakov Emdin, Ayin Bishilot Ya'avet, that's Rav Yaakov Ben Tzvi, Shir Sigal HaRamah, D'midver of Mash, D'maser Ksafim D'nog V'alma Idna Kai. He says, from the words of the Ramah, it sounds like it's from something called Ma'aser Ksafim. Now, this is very interesting, because all of us, when I say, you know, do you give Ma'aser? So all of you would be thinking above your income. Now, it doesn't say that any place in the Torah that you have to give ma'aser of your income. What does it say you have to give ma'aser of? Your even among crops, right? It's not everything is ma'aser on a Torah level. You're talking about crops. You're talking about very limited things. So he writes over here, v'emet ze'inu shelo nemar ze al ma'aser ksafim de lo shor lenusuye be de'inu elot staka. That's tzedakah. You're not allowed to do it by tzedakah. V'kach kasav gon bal ashlov, and so on. Rather, what can you do? Didafka, top of page 4. Didafka b'ma'aser tzfu'ah hu d'shari l'nasot. Avalo b'ma'aser ksafim. Ayin sham. And he says, and others agree with this as well. So this is great, because he just now, by the time we're finished with all this, it was only by tzedakah, it was only by ma'aser, and it was only by tzedakah, and then it's only by ma'aser, and it's only by ma'aser, we ended up only by tzfu'ah. So if you want this to work, then you have to become a farmer. Yeah. Okay. The bigger question is why we give ma'aser, and is it a din? Is it a halacha? Is it a din midrabanan, or is it a minhag? And depending on how you analyze it, it can make lots of differences. If you want, I'll give a shir about ma'aser. Now some people in this room, like, and I'm saying that in very broad terms, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and they would see themselves following him in all kinds of things that he said and did and so on. He had one particular custom when it came to this, which encapsulated a lot of the topics that we saw today. This is some quoting from Rav Schechter's book, Nefesh HaRav, which has a lot of his practices in terms of halacha, but he writes as follows. He quotes in the beginning of the Gemara that says that Iyun Tfilah is not good, because then it looks like you believe that you will be answered. And therefore, he says, then he would say, Mishaberach, for someone who was sick, he wouldn't say that this should happen, Bavur, because the whole community will pray for the person, because then you're breaking this halacha. Who says that your prayer is going to make this person better? You can't say that I'm praying and now make the person better. Oh, or when he would go up and have an aliyah. right? Give them a blessing because such person blesses them. Dezeh mamish iyun tefillah. He goes, that is iyun tefillah in the classical sense, and he was very careful personally. Rather, eliyomim bavur shaploni nodir tztaka ba'avuram. So he was not concerned about the last 2 points we saw in the Pitchei Tshuva, and he would say that when are you allowed to say that, you know, please do this? Okay, and say that he'll give tztaka afterwards. And then it tells a story about somebody who gave, it's a nice story. The kol kai gav nechal b'chal masha amru selazul tztaka b'shvil sheikh b'ni. Right, you're allowed to give money for it, even though you don't have expectations necessarily work. But he felt that just to say that, you know, bavur shehakila mitpalel avuram, who says that your tefillah can work? So that's how makpid he personally was on this. Upam hitpalel rabbeinu b'yeshiva b'yom hei b'minyan shelo haya ragil itpalel shama. And once the rav came to a minyan that he normally didn't attend. Ukivdu hagabai ba'aliyah, and the gabai there came, gave an aliyah. Vayakol kach sameach l'roto shama, and he was so happy to see him. Ad shebirchu b'mishaberech. He gave him mishaberech. Now, I don't know if you know this, on Monday and Thursday mornings, they don't give mishaberechs. Generally, they barely daven on Monday and Thursdays. They do this so rapidly, but they don't give mishaberechs. He goes, l'mrot shehayayom chol, but derech klal in omrim tefilat mishaberech b'chol, mishum tircha du tzibur. Generally, you don't say it because people are rushing. The hikpid alav rabbeinu shelo yomar ba'avur shelalach vodot ha'Torah, and the Rav told him, don't say ba'avur l'Torah she'af zeh b'fkinat lo tenas Hashem, because that's also testing God. L'tvoa bracha ba'avur kiyum mitzvah, to ask for bracha because you just now did a mitzvah, which is the text in the regular mishaberach. V'rak b'ma'aser mutal l'nasot, only by giving ma'aser are you allowed to test God. U'gemur kol zeh, and the whole thing is brought down in the Gemara. Ela bavur shenadar kach v'kach liyeshiva. He says, give me bracha on condition that I'll give a donation to the yeshiva. V'lo tafas ha-gabai sheyesh lo rabbeinu k'pei dabezeh. And the guy didn't catch it. Not to say mishaberech that. And he was so happy the Rav was there. Mirov simchato amar pam sheni mishaberech ba'ad eshet rabbeinu. So he gave him another mishaberech for the Rav's wife. V'omar rabbeinu od pam shirma ba'avur shenadar kach v'kach liyeshiva. So again he said, okay, so say that I'm going to give this and this money to the yeshiva. Shuma kabalatzmo neder nosaf. So he accepted on himself to give more money. Ubikesh menu rabbeinu shelo yamar od mishaberech. He says, please don't say another one. Achagabai hazakein adayin lo hivin k'pedet rabbeinu b'nidon. V'amar pam shlishit mishaberach. He said another one, ba'ad for all the rabbis and the students and everybody. V'amar benu od pam shiyoma b'neder, before neder that he'll give more money. I assume he didn't go back to that minion because it cost him a great deal. It cost him a great deal of money. But again, I just want to show you that he took the topic that we're looking at today, and he took this quite seriously in terms that we have no right to go and to pray to God and say that I want results from the prayer and expect him to ask for those results. Tztaka is a little bit different, so when somebody would try to give him mishaberech, then he would flip it around and say, okay, but on condition that I give tztaka, because tztaka is something that at least you're allowed to do. Yeah. Both. Correct. No, that's absolutely correct. And therefore, we do all of those things, but we can't necessarily expect. We know that these things work. Chazal tells these things work. What's the matter? Correct. I'm just saying it's our...
In other words, it could be that whatever. In other words, that it does matter. You don't know the desire where I was to begin with, so you don't really know what your tefillah did invoke. But the problem is that if you want to assume it's a bad word, but in other words, if you want to think that we're striving towards having a relationship with God, then you... In other words, it's like an age-old question of, well, am I just like this tiny little drop of sand or whatever, or am I, in my own personal relationship with God, where,
If you think about it,
I have the right to talk to God 3 times a day, or, and any time I want in between,
But if you think about it, this only elevates human significance, because we have the right to ask God for chesed, which means we can ask. We're not deserving of it, but we can ask for chesed, and that chesed works. Yeah.
I think any parent can understand this.
parent. I don't.
Once a child.
Not me.
You've got to your parents to do something that you really want to do, and they listen to you, and they still say no. And only later on you realize that it really wasn't necessarily in your best interest for them to say yes to you. And it may seem extremely difficult in our everyday lives. If you're talking about praying for someone who's extremely sick, you pray to Hashem to save them, and he doesn't save them. But in the long run, we can't really do the cheshbon of what was really best.
Right.
We have to trust at some point that this parent knows really what was best in the long run.
Okay. I mean, that's certain.
Right.
What you pray for is that God do what is best for you and that you have the wisdom to accept that.
Do what's best for you anyway.
I think we pray.
Sometimes a parent will say no to a child to punish them. And sometimes a parent will say no to the child because it's really not healthy for them. And it's not in their best interest. And there's a difference between the two.
Okay.
The child will say, if you're not letting me go to this party because you're punishing me for not doing my homework last week, can we do a different punishment some other time? And that's possible. But if you're not letting them go to the party because you think it's going to be extremely bad for them in the long run, that's a completely different situation.
Okay, okay, but that's not the point over here right now. No, I'm serious. That's not the point over here. It's this expectation on our side rather than God running the world generally.
The expectation comes not from a place of entitlement, I think. It comes from a place of us really thinking that we really know best.
Okay, now, I want to get back to something that I mentioned in the beginning, and that is the idea of being able to transfer my good deed to somebody else. I mean, that itself, I think, was interesting. I have a couple of shelot and tshuvot, which we're not going to go into all that much, but you will see them. In Source 21, Rav Menashe Klein writes, tshuva, be'inyan hamocher schar mitzvah va'onish avera. Somebody who sells either their mitzvot or their averot. I don't know if there's a market. Umashe hiksha od ha... So listen to a story. Umasha hiksha od ha de enichon lamkor schar mitzvah shekvar asa, that regarding the question, can you sell a mitzvah you've already done? The hiksha lo tamid chacham echad b'yushalayim me'maseh she'ira b'yimeha marsha b'shnei shutfim, there are two partners, she'echad me'hem avar avira gdola b'shat she'alcho la'osok b'schara b'tchatet v'hitcharet ma'od, and he was very remorse about his sin that he did. And his partner bought from him his avera together with the profit that he made doing that sin. They put a contract. The guy died and went into heaven. Now at this point in the story, okay, I mean, till this point we could verify. But once he got in front of the Beit and Shamala, and he was judged for that sin. But Ta'an Shema Olam Lo Avar Avera Kazu. He said, never did this. So then it was done. Okay, you go to a Din Torah with him because he claims that he sold it to you. So he goes and he... So this is interesting because he really does address such a question in a serious fashion.
Didn't Rivka do that? When she said to Yaakov, she said,
she offered. She definitely offered, but that's slightly different because she's saying he's going to curse you and I'll take the curse on me, and we also don't know do these things work. Yeah, she said it. I accept the point. There are a number of things from Tanakh that you could bring up. In Tzitz Eliezer in Source 22, Shutafut Lagabe Limu Torah V'Kiyum Mitzvot, partnership regarding Torah and Mitzvot. Right, Yisachar and Zvulun. Right. He writes here in the middle of a mitzvah she'adam oseh, the ya'aseh. He's talking about learning Torah is one thing, and we'll try to understand why learning Torah and Yisachar and Zvulun works. He goes, but by a mitzvah, ma shaychut ba l'chavero l'schut ba, v'im mitorat schar, schar mitzvah b'hayam aleka. If it's reward, there's no reward in this world. And he's talking about a case which, if somebody stole a mitzvah from somebody else, the case is brought down the Shulchan Aruch, one person was supposed to be a tzaddik, and somebody else ran in and pushed out of the way, and he grabbed it. So it says he has to pay money to the guy that he took it from. He has to pay. So he says, no, that's not, he's paying for the mitzvah, he's paying a punishment for embarrassing the other person. That's a knas. That's a punishment because don't ask. He's not paying for having stolen the mitzvah, as it were. But he's very clear over here. How can I do a mitzvah and he gets the schar for the mitzvah? In source 23 on the bottom, this is the Netziv, the Meshiv Davar. There was a person who was known to be a very great person, and he sold half of his merits, umitzvatav, besach gadol 22,000 ruble, 22,000 ruble he sold his good deeds for, leish ashir, holech bitumov achafetz mitzvatav ma'od, this person who wanted his good deeds very much, v'kibol amocher mechatzir hakesef, and half the money changed hands, because that person is not so respected up in heaven. Kokach. Ve'eni elo ke'echad Yisrael, he's just like everyone else. He wanted his money back. He wanted his other half. And he wants to know exactly what to do. So again, this is a very interesting shuv, and he also goes into this question of being able to sell. Now, generally what you... Okay, so let me address that. Let me address that for a moment. Look at source 18. That is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. First about learning Torah. Learning Torah. Source 18, Shulchan Aruch, this is Nirudea, the laws of learning Torah. Aval im kfar asak b'Torah, a little bit before that we want. Misha eif shalom lomod. Source 18. Somebody who's not able to learn. She'enu yodea klal lomod. Omot b'nei hatardot she'yesh lo. He's incapable or has no time. Yaspik la'acherim ha'lomdim. He should support other people that learn. V'tichshov lo ki'il lomad ba'atzmo. And the Rambam writes, it's seen as if he himself is learning. And two people can make a deal. One person's going to learn, the other person's going to support him. Aval im kfar asak b'Torah, but learnt Torah he already learnt, einu yachol lemchor lo chelko b'shvil mamon she'enei lo. You can't sell what you already learnt. Right now, why not? If I can, one second. If I already learnt, why can't I sell it? So apparently what he's telling us over here, I'm not saying this is 100%, but I think that this should be the answer to our question before. I can't sell a mitzvah that I've already done, because if I could, then why should this be any different from any other mitzvah? I'm sorry. No. Because I can see, there is a concept of enabling someone else to do a mitzvah. So let's say that person A has a capability of learning Torah, but he can only learn 2 hours a day because he has to go and work otherwise. Person B says, you know what, you're very good at learning. I will cover your learning. And now instead of learning for 2 hours a day, he can learn 8 hours a day. So now does that other person have an interest in those other 6 hours? I would certainly think he enabled those 6 hours. So if you want to talk about business in terms of a partnership, he's certainly, by the way, it's interesting, The Gra tells us right away in source 19, where do you get this from? From Yisachar and Zvulun, quoting the source of that. The Shach in 19 says, V'yichalekimo b'schar, and he should divide his, and give him wages, klomar, meaning, schar Torah v'schar mashir v'yach zeyeh ben shnei and b'yachad. He understands a perfect partnership over here, 100%, which means you want half of the schar, I get half of your income. Which means not just I'll give a little extra money, that's the way the Shach understands it. Can you imagine what that will do to the industry? But nonetheless, by learning Torah we find this, but I think that this is a concept of enabling somebody to do a mitzvah. So if you enabled someone to do a mitzvah, so then there should be something. Now the question is this only by learning Torah, or is this by other things as well? We saw before that Rav Waldenberg and the Tzitz Eliezer wanted to say that if you did a mitzvah, so then why should I get the schar? I mean, that doesn't make sense. Although there should be a category of enabling. Look, just like if you cause someone to do an avera, what do you call that? It's lifnei iver, and you broke something, right? You broke a law by causing something to do an avera. Is anyone going to say that God only has that on the negative and there's no such thing on the positive? Which means, if I go back to our letter towards the beginning, is it possible that if I cause other people, look, if a teacher, if a parent, if a rabbi, if somebody encourages a child, a student, community member to do things they wouldn't have done otherwise, I would like to believe that they get some kind of schar, but the schar is for enabling. So is it possible over here that there is schar for enabling? Yes, but what I still don't understand is how that helps the third person, which means they can still say, I'm doing it, the schut, the third person. I still don't know why that should work. And that was the point where I had the silence of the person that I asked this to, and say, how does it, which means, if you want to tell me now, again, Levi's in prison, Shimon says to Reuven, or Reuven says to Shimon, please do something good for Levi, so this should help Shimon, it should help Reuven, but I don't understand how exactly it helped Levi. Now, if you're going to tell me enough people do it, it's a community thing, it's Klal Yisrael, it's more, okay, maybe you can convince me, but I'm not all that convinced. Let me get back to the Rambam that we said quickly. Look, not everybody agrees with the Rambam on this point, even though the Shulchan Aruch does, and it's based on a Gemara.
What number is it?
Okay, the Rambam was in source 28. The Gemara, which we'll start with, is in source number 24. 24 starts off with a famous Mishnah, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Olam Haba. All Israel has a share in the world to come. Now, if you stop there, it's good. If you continue the next line in the Mishnah, it says, Ve'elu She'ein Lam Chelek Olam Haba. Right? Everyone has, and these are the ones that don't have. Which means the de facto is you have till you lose it. One of the things is v'halochesh ala makah. Somebody who murmurs, whispers, does a charm on some kind of wound. The Gemara in Source 25 says v'halochesh ala makah amar b'yochanan uv'rokekba. No, you have to actually do the incantation and spit. That's part of it. The spit is the... The spit is for the medicinal purposes. 26, Rishu ben Levi Omer. Rishu ben Levi. Asu lehitrapot b'divrei Torah. You are not allowed to heal yourself with words of Torah. Lahagen shani, but to protect yourself you can, which is really exactly what the Rambam told us before. Ve'eliki marhasa de'ikamaka, when you're not allowed, when you have a wound. E de'ikamaka asur, v'tulo, only makano, v'atnan. Halochish lamaka, ein lochelik olamaba, v'hab imra rabbi yochanan, v'rokeik shanu, l'fisha ein maskim shem shemayim al rakika. So again, that's part of the background to this. I can translate some of this. What okay, so that's why I want to read the Shulchan Aruch on it, because the Shulchan Aruch will be much clearer. In source 30. Halochish ala makah. Somebody who does their incantation on a wound. O al hachola, not just the makah, anybody who's sick. The achakach kore posuk min haTorah. Okay, sorry, and you spit. Then you say a verse in the Torah. Ein lo chelek lolam haba. That's include literally avodah zarah, but you say, hold it, but they read a posuk. No, still that person just now did magic, even though they read a posuk. The im ain't a rokeik, but if they don't do the spitting part, again, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Isura miha ika. Nonetheless, it's still not allowed. The im yesh bo sakanat nefashot hakol mutar. But if somebody is in a case of sakanat nefashot, it allows it. Before talk about that, source 31, if a person's in a life and death situation, it's allowed.
You have to spit at the same time?
Even without the spitting. This is talking even without the spitting. Look at the Taz in Isura Mi'a'ika. It's prohibited even without the spitting. Pirish. Belochesh Pasuk. Afilu Belo Haskarat Shem Shemayim Al Makah. V'hu Adin Shar Choli She'enu Makah. Kakotu Beit Yosef. What he's saying is that in order to say incantations. Now, I want to make this whole part very, very simple right now. Are you allowed to say Tehillim? What's the answer? Yes, you're allowed to say Tehillim. What was the Rambam's problem? Well, you just now saw there was a Mishnah, there was a Gemara, Ein lo chelek olam haba, and so on and so forth. The problem over here is if you say it as an incantation, which gets us back, do you want to be a voodoo Jew? You will say this magical thing, and this now person will be healed. If you take Tehillim and turn Tehillim into some kind of magic, that becomes prohibited from the Torah as far as the Rambam understands. And even to the point of perhaps being seen as avodah zarah. On the other hand, if you open up Tehillim and you read the Tehillim, you use King David's Psalms in order to talk to God, that is absolutely permitted as long as what you're doing right now is talking to God, which brings us back to the same point. Are you allowed to pray to God? Yes, you're absolutely allowed to pray to God. Now, when you pray to God, should you be expecting, okay, I said the Tehillim, now that should absolutely heal the person. So it goes back to the first point in terms of expectations. Yes? From the depths I've called out to you. So pick the right one and talk to God. Use David HaMelech's words. Absolutely. Use David HaMelech's words. I'm not telling you not to say Tehillim. What am I telling you to do?
I don't know. I'm trying to clarify. From what I understand, you're not supposed to pluck things out of context and make them incantations. Like besides
correct.
Say the unpronounceable name of God 10 times and sprinkle, you know, whatever.
Right.
The Samim around the thing and whatever. Is that what you're saying? You're
right.
Right,
right. Which means that Jews can turn anything into avodah zarah, even the Torah. Where the Kutzker Rebbe once said that we can turn even the Torah into avodah zarah. We can take a pasuk from the Torah and turn it into avodah zarah by turning it into some part of a magical incantation. Do people today do this with Tehillim? Yes, people do this with Tehillim. You can have an evening, you can have a morning, you can have an afternoon, but the Tehillim should be real bona fide prayer to God, not just I'm going to read this because this will make him better. That's really what the point over here is. And the most important thing is remember not to go walking briskly.